Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. It's nice to be here with you in studio, and I want to give a shout out to all our friends of the next chapter with Charlie. You know, Paul, today marks the first time in 2 years of podcasting that we will do a show on planning for the new year of 2019, as this show will come out day after New Year's. That's kind of surprising, since when you consider that much of my past has been about life planning, yet we have not produced a single show on that topic. And today, our approach to life planning may be strikingly new for our listeners, but it is a process I've used most of 2018 and have found it quite gratifying as well as productive. Now, in order to help set us straight on this unusual path, I am with my special friend and spiritual guide, Taryn Voget, who has been a guest a couple times on the show. As a busy executive coach, entrepreneur, and author of the delightful book, Trustfall, Taryn is full of out-of-the-box thinking, really out-of-the-box thinking, when it comes to most matters in life and life planning. I asked Taryn to write a brief thoughts, write a brief paragraph on her thoughts toward the New Year's planning, and these are what I consider provocative words. Taryn writes, "Many of us push to continually grow and expand, but what if we don't need to work so hard? What if life is exactly where to I'm going to start that paragraph all over again. Many of us push ourselves to continually grow and expand, but what if we don't need to work so hard? What if life knows exactly where to find us to deliver the experiences we need for our own evolution? And what if there is no real action necessary on our part other than to be more aware of life's bigger plan? This podcast explores new ideas about our own evolution and how life is here to serve our highest destiny and greatest expansion always." I think that's quite provocative as far as not planning and waiting for life to do what it's going to do. So let's all be ready to have our traditional view of life planning challenged by the ever so insightful and innovative thinking of Taryn Voget. Taryn, welcome to the next chapter with Charlie.
Thanks, Charlie. I'm so happy to be here and happy to be back on the show. It's such a delight. I love this topic.
Yeah, I do too. We've had, what do you think, 4 hours of conversation on this topic in the last couple of days?
I know, and I love what you said, that we should have recorded one of those conversations, because it really was the genesis of this. It was such a great bunch of insights, so I'm thrilled to be sharing what you and I talked about earlier with the bigger audience.
Yeah, and we have to distill it, you know, because it was 4 hours of conversation, and I really can't wait to get into this entirely new approach to planning our life in your, as I said, out-of-the-box thinking. But it's not out-of-the-box thinking as much as it's progressive thinking. I think you don't allow the status quo to influence your thinking. Your thinking. I used to say that I was average, only I was average about 2 years ahead of everyone else. I think you're average about a decade ahead of everybody else, and you have really interesting thoughts.
Well, thanks. Thanks for that compliment. It's funny you say that, because I really had this awareness in this last year that I really do feel about 10 years ahead of my time. And it's not a good feeling. It's usually a feeling of beating my head against a wall or feeling crazy. But eventually it all catches up. But, you know, right before the show, we were talking about things that feel scripted, like Christmas, for example, feels somewhat of a scripted holiday. And I think, you know, the collective consciousness, we're trying to re-script it in a better way. I've had this epiphany over the last, I don't know, 10 years or so, that so much of life feels scripted. You know, this idea that you go to school, you get good grades, you get into a good college, you get a good job, you save money in your retirement, you know, you've got a family, a white picket fence, a car, go on a few vacations, and one day you retire and you get to really enjoy your life. Like, that's the great American script. And I realized many years ago that that script is really quite flawed. And so a lot of, I think, what you think is provocative thinking is me just realizing I don't really care for the script. And what's really below that that's more true. And I, you know, that was some of the ideas that you and I were talking about, which is, you know, if you throw away the script for life, what's really there? Like, what's the deeper truth?
That's really a great insight. And the script, you know, it's funny that we have this script, but the script only works for a few. You know, the script is really successful for the minority. It's not, I don't think it's successful for the majority. I think the majority have then feel badly about themselves because they can't abide by the script, and they have deflated egos and deflated hearts and states of being. And I agree with you that we need to amend that script and think differently. So I want to start off today with more than a year ago, and because I did it in 2018, more than a year ago, you challenged me. And I'm the anal life planning specialist. You know, I have, you know, my whole planning thing according to the four P's of life, of passion, power, purpose, and people, and how you can make goals in each one of them. And there's checklists to follow and all. You know, I was really into that. And you challenged me to let go of my list of to-dos and to-bes and just accept life as it comes. Now, that may not sound too different, but when you let go of all the planning and just wait for things to happen, the waiting is sometimes unbearable. And you and I talked about it as possibly even getting into boredom. But you know what? For the most part, I heeded your advice and found that 2018 was quite productive and quite gratifying, and it was all done without a checklist. It was just letting life come to me. Please tell me, from your perspective, why do you think that is so?
Well, sort of, you've got to take a step back in thinking about this, which is, I think we've been sold this idea that unless we're actively making goals, that we aren't really achieving our full potential. That in order to really achieve what we want, we've got to set a goal, go after it, achieve it, and then do that again and again and again. I mean, that's sort of talking about scripts, that's kind of the script for one that's really on a, you know, a path of ever-evolving expansion, which I think most people are in some way, shape, or form. And that if you don't have goals, you're lazy and you're not living up to your potential, right? So if you sort of take that as the premise, you know, this idea that we're always trying to achieve something greater, and we've got check boxes and, you know, to-dos, and we need this much in retirement, and we need this kind of a career, and we need this kind of a promotion or this kind of a house or, you know, whatever the thing is, right? And what I have found in my own experience is that when we create all these goals, it actually creates quite a bit of stress, but deeper than the stress, it creates a lot of busy work, meaning that we're doing a lot of activities that don't yield us more of what we're really wanting. Because I think more of what we're really wanting is to be in the flow of life, to have those synchronicities, those magical moments, those connections, again, those unexpected things that bring us delight, more time with our families. I mean, what we're really wanting is not all of these achievements. It's something deeper than that, or more in the flow of life. And so the fallacy is that we think, well, if we don't have a goal, we don't know what we're working towards. But what I've come to realize is that life knows exactly what we need in order to grow and evolve. We don't have to set that up. Life knows that. And so if we can be more relaxed about it, we can actually work not as hard and get more of what we're really wanting. And so you did this in 2018. What was your experience? Share more about that. I'm curious.
Oh, well, you know, I think it has a lot to do with my writing. I liked my writing better. I just didn't allow myself to feel the pressure of having to deliver on really false goals. You know, whenever I'm making goals, they're sort of false goals. They're just goals that I think sound good, but there's really little data to support it and little reason to support it. And the big thing that happened that, you know, I've talked quite a bit on the show, the big thing that happened, and I was totally unexpected, was my involvement with Wells of Life. And, you know, I spent more than a couple months in Uganda, and we have just, you know, delivered water to hundreds of thousands of people and saved the lives of tens of thousands of children. And this was not planned. You know, I didn't plan to go to Uganda for a month. It just, it came up, and this sounded like a good opportunity, and I had a lot of meetings and a lot to do, and it just came up. There's no way in January I would have known of that. No way whatsoever. And yet it was one of the best months of the year for me. Although I do, you know, we're going to have to talk about later, there is some planning involved, but it's not this big major goal setting sort of thing. And I found also in letting our marriage happen and just being kind and compassionate, my marriage is absolutely wonderful. I've been married 33 years, and it's just my wife and I get along so well. And it's without having this big goal of, okay, Charlie, here, you've got to be this kind of husband, and you've got to be, you know, this kind of person. So I've had some great moments, but I've also, as we talked about, if you're waiting for life to happen, there is that waiting factor. And that waiting factor can be perceived, as we discussed, as boredom. And boredom is really just another word for waiting. And it's another word for waiting to become. I think I even wrote a blog on that, boredom or becoming. And it's a waiting period. So those are some of the things I experienced.
First of all, I love what you said, which is a false goal, because I that's so perfectly articulated. I think when people create these goal lists, most of them are false goals, because the goals in our heart don't need to be written. They're already there, whether we articulate them or not. It's when we have to write them all down that it almost feels like we're talking ourselves into it versus it just being something in our innate consciousness. But you make the perfect point, too, that all these beautiful, unexpected things happen. That's really been my experience. I mean, I gave up goal setting a long time ago. But when you let go of that, you give life the opportunity to bring you something far better than what you expected, right? So we think that if we don't have a goal that we're going to achieve, we're not going to have much of anything. The exact inverse is what's true in my experience, and you just mentioned that, right? Something far better than you could have had on your goal list showed up.
Right.
It's like, it's a funny paradox. It's almost like the more we let go, the more we create the opening for life to deliver us gift after gift after gift that we couldn't have expected. And I think you're so right about that boredom. I'm sort of in that moment right now in my own life. I'm between...
Yeah, you mentioned that, and I just project. I cannot mm-hmm. picture Taryn Voget as bored.
Oh, I mean, it's boredom that it'll stun you how bored I've been lately. But it's what I just know this place so well because I've been here so many times. It's boredom, but what it really is being inside the void of creation. Like it's almost like some part of you steps into that space where all of creation is possible, and it's everything and nothing all at the same time. It feels like boredom, but it's really this infinite creation, and I've just got to sit there and let it create, almost like a woman gestates a baby in a sense, right?
Yes.
And one day there'll be this amazing birth, and it'll all appear in my reality. But in this moment, I'm busy creating without knowing exactly what I'm creating in the void. And it feels like boredom, and it's almost like painfully boring.
But you know what it really requires? It really requires, and you wrote in your paragraph, an openness to receive. If you're not open to receive, you can miss what life is throwing at you.
Yeah, I had this girlfriend call me the other night, and she said, Taryn, oh my gosh, I'm listening to the best audio tape. It's called The Secret. And I laughed so hard because this was a big popular movie that came out about a decade ago, The Secret. It just swept through the spiritual community. And it was this whole idea that, you know, ask and you shall receive. Ask the universe for what you want and you shall receive. And everybody started putting their orders into the universe like it was a catalog, like, You know, I'll find the abundance to pay for it. I'll pay for it now on my credit card, and the abundance will show up to pay off my credit card. Ask and I shall receive, right? So it's sort of this funny thing that swept through the spiritual community, and I kind of laughed because 10 years later, you know, my friend had just kind of found this. And I said, you know, I said, that's a great place, and if you're feeling called to it, it's not that it's bad information, but it's incomplete. And it goes back to this idea of goal setting, right? If I can just imagine it, then it will show up. I think what has been my experience is that, and I've really rarely heard anybody talk about this, especially in the spiritual community, but really, life is a cosmic receiving game. It's not a cosmic creating game, in a sense, or going after something game. It's a cosmic receiving game, meaning most people think that they are would be able to receive $1 million, a new car, a house, the dream job, all of it, you know, the perfect relationship, anything you can imagine. Most people think, oh, yeah, I could receive it. But if I were to say to you, Charlie, you know what? I'd like to take you on a $50,000 vacation. Come with me tomorrow. All expenses paid. How would you feel about receiving that?
Going with you would be good. Going with somebody else may not be a good idea.
Right, but if I just wrote you a check for $50,000 and said, okay, Charlie, take yourself on a vacation, could you receive that?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Just a $50,000 check. All right. This is actually a good point, so I think you're probably a good receiver in that sense. I asked a friend of mine this recently, and she's like, there's no way I could take your money. I couldn't do it. Most people think they could actually receive that, but they really, when it came down to it and it actually the transaction were to happen, it would be very difficult. You'd feel bad. You'd feel like you owed them something. You know, you'd feel like you were indebted in some way. One of my closest friends is the world's worst receiver. I mean, you give her a gift and she gives you 10 in return because she just can't bear to receive something without giving 10 things in return. The thing with goal setting and this idea of, you know, I need to go and create all these things. Well, actually, life has all these things it wants to give you. Are we open enough and do we have enough self-worth to receive them?
See, that's perfect.
If life wanted to just give you a mansion, could you receive the mansion? No strings attached. Just here you go. Right?
Yeah. That would be difficult. You know, I can admit that would be difficult. You know, we chatted about, and something you brought up, a concept that I really resonate, and I think it has a lot to do with goal setting, and that is our need to unravel our ego. And you know, as I told you, that really hit me, because I think the needs of our ego for self-esteem, self-importance, worthiness from other people so often drives our goal setting and our planning for life. Explain to me a bit more about what this means about unraveling our ego. I have my ideas, but I think it's central to this goal setting. If our ego is driving our goal setting, if our ego for the acquisition of stuff and the acceptance and love of other people, if that's what we're trying to do, it's very difficult to accomplish. And then the irony is, when we attain it, we're still in the same place we always were.
So true. It's been my experience, and I'll just use a personal story to illustrate it, is when I launched my second company, I had all of these big goals. My company is going to make, you know, $10 million in the first 2 years or 3 years. I'm going to be, you know, on all these media outlets. Like, I had all of these big dreams and goals for my initial, or, you know, yep, for my initial launch and vision of this company. And I'd even listed them out. I mean, this was probably about 10 years ago. And I listed them all out, you know.
That was when you were into goal setting.
That was when I was into goal setting, which is not long after I gave it up. But it listed it all out. And what I realized later was that I didn't really hit any of those goals. Actually, not a single one that was on that list. They were very materially driven, a lot of them, or kind of, I would say, ego-driven. And I say ego, like, it was sort of a sweet part of me that wanted recognition for my work. You know, if I could get on all these media shows and talk about this work, then people would recognize that I've got something to offer. And so a lot of my goals were about either needing some recognition for my work, because I thought that would make me feel good, or needing money because that somehow validated my self-worth in the world or my contribution in the world. And the truth of the matter is, I didn't achieve any of those things. And it wasn't until I deconstructed this or reevaluated it a few years later that I realized what I got out of my initial launch of the company was far better and richer than any of those goals. I mean, I took my own consciousness to a whole nother level. I really dug deep into a topic that I don't think has been explored anywhere in the world the way I've quite explored it. Developed relationships and connections that I still have to this day. You know, pushed myself to the edge in terms of what I was capable of doing in terms of creating something. And in a good way. I mean, I pushed just massive creative output to the point where I was like, I can't do any more than this. This is my edge. And I knew where that was. And it was kind of a cool feeling. And so all these amazing things and experiences happened, and I really deepened as a person. And yet none of those things were on my goal list, but they were all the things that were really far better. And so what was on my goal list was quite ego-driven, but the experience that I received was really quite heart-centered. And so I think you're right. I think a lot of goal setting is in the ego, but really life, and this is what I wrote in the paragraph earlier, you know, life is trying to give us experiences to unravel the ego. And what I mean by that is, you know, what helped me at least in part unravel my ego, or at least began the journey of that, was realizing that all these things on my goal list when I launched my business were things that I didn't achieve. And, like, I had to just kind of let go of that and just be like, all right, well, what I got was better, so is that really what I'm wanting? You know, are those really the things that I'm wanting? Or did life have a bigger dream and made sure I didn't get those things so that I wouldn't have attached more ego to it, right?
Yeah, I agree, and it's really, you know, I'm so, you know, as I grow older, I'm so into this. I mean, not so into it. It is just a topic of thought for me, and that's the legacy. And for what do I want to be remembered? And it is certainly none of my goal lists. You know, I could care less if I achieve those. And they are all relational and internal lists that are much more important to me. And those are not typically on the goal list.
Yeah, they're not. You know, I don't know if I've talked about this on any of your past shows, but I went through quite an extensive shamanic training, and we call it sort of fondly shaman school. It's not actually called that.
But oh, so now you're admitting you're a shaman.
Yeah, you know, it's public now. But one of the exercises in shaman school, you go through this whole program where you really deal with death. And one of the exercises really changed my life, where you had to really go through your own death and be on your deathbed. And you had all these people that played different characters in your life, like your mother, your father, your partner, whoever. And I mean, there were just literally Kleenexes all over the room. I mean, it's really quite emotional to go through your own death and to realize when you're on your deathbed what really matters. And I can, just like you said, it wasn't anything on my goal list. It wasn't anything material. It was the love that I shared with people. That's what mattered. And the regret or two that I had was that I didn't amend some relationships in my life. It had nothing to do with vacations, cars, houses, promotions, notoriety, fame. It had nothing to do with that. It was all how much connection with people and love did I share. And it was quite, it actually changed my life, and that's when I stopped making goal lists. It was a couple of years after I launched my company. Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a before we take a break, because I want to take a little bit, as usual, I want to take a little bit different direction on our break that's still in topic. But as I was preparing for the show at my normal location, I have a little place that I go to regularly, and I know all the servers and the managers, and it's a very quiet business location. And I was preparing the show, and I had a conversation with a 35-year-old manager and showed her your paragraph, and she looked and she says, yeah, like letting life happen without planning sounds fine for those of you who have experienced some degree of success. But what about those who have not experienced those degrees of success? And with her, it was at 35 years old. It was, what about like marriage and children? How do you respond to her about not setting a goal for finding something? You know, how do you set a goal for finding a spouse? I mean, but, you know, it's that she needs to have direction in that. You know, she feels lost. You know, the waiting, the idea of waiting was just horror in her mind.
You know, I'm so glad she asked that question, because I'm 43 and I'm still single, and I actually don't want kids, but for a long time I did, now I don't. But I really can relate to that, this idea of just waiting for Mr. Right or Ms. Right to come along. And just it feels like an eternal waiting. And, you know, it goes back to the what if this is exactly the experience that we're needing in order to find the love within ourselves and not be looking for it in another partner. Meaning, when you're thinking that someone's going to show up in your life to provide you all the things that you're wanting, whether it's companionship or friendship or to alleviate loneliness or to provide you some financial resources or care for a family that you're wanting, like when you're waiting for all of that to show up, you're putting a lot in someone else to make you happy. And what if life is just unraveling us from that false idea and creating a stronger self within so that we can be more emotionally self-sufficient? And so, you know, a lot of my girlfriends, we find ourselves single. And I think it's because if we had partners, we wouldn't be doing the internal growth that our soul is really wanting. And yet I can completely relate to this fact of feeling like, wow, it'd really be great if a partner showed up. And yet I'm also keen to the fact of like, yeah, and maybe today's just not the day and it's not the time. Like I've got some more inner work to do for myself, for my own growth. It's what I'm wanting on a bigger emotional level. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense.
For happiness or success, like, okay, so you get this great relationship. Now do you feel successful? Like, I don't know anyone who's ever achieved something on their goal list or their life task list that all of a sudden they woke up and they're like, oh my God, I achieved this. Now I feel successful.
Yeah, well,
it's 50, a false idea, right?
53% of them didn't find success since after our divorce rate. So,
go through my list of accomplishments, and you know, there's a lot of them, and to be like, well, this is clearly a successful woman, but do I feel successful? You know, and it's taken me a lot of years to be like, well, do I? I don't know. I mean, certainly, like, my list of accomplishments should think that I was successful, but do I feel that way? And I really don't know anyone whose accomplishments make them feel successful.
And
things
that's,
are not correlated.
And that's what I want to talk about after the break. So let's take a quick break, and we're going to jump right into that topic. So it was a perfect transition. So let's take a quick break. Hi, you're listening to Charlie Hedges, and this is The Next Chapter with Charlie. I am here with my good friend and spiritual guide, Taryn Voguette, and we are talking about an entirely different process of life planning. And since this is the beginning of the new year of 2019, you might consider this for your planning for the year, although it is certainly challenging. Now, we've talked about goal setting and unraveling the ego, and that there is so much in our ego and our self-esteem and self-importance and self-worth and those sorts of ideals that are important that are all externally driven. And you know, Taryn, I've made an observation about the driving forces of the productive-oriented culture found in much of the United States. And I, you know what I think it comes down to, or really a major contributor, is our economic system of capitalism, which also, you know, I do happen to believe it's the best economic system out there. However, it seems that in the United States, many of us have made capitalism a dogma and not just an economic system. In other words, what I mean is that stuff and wealth we accumulate through capitalism plays a powerful role in how we perceive our self-worth. With when you know collecting our stuff, when other aspects or other in non-tangibles like love and service and kindness and compassion really say a whole lot more about who we really are than the stuff we possess. And so capitalism, while it's worked really fine in building an economy, I think has contributed to this goal setting of trying to achieve what I can achieve through this economic system. Would you agree with that?
I really would, and I think if I could articulate it in a sentence, this idea that we define our self-worth by how much money we make, or what our title is, or how much we have, or the home we've purchased, right? We really define our self-worth by that. And so this idea of capitalism as an economic system versus capitalism as a way to define who we are as people and our value in the world, I think has gotten quite mixed up.
Yeah, it really has. It really has. I think it's damaging. You know, as I've, you know, Richard Rohr wrote the book Falling Upward, and he talked about the first and second half of life, although it's really the first two thirds of life, or the first three quarters of life, and the last one quarter, which you hit the second half, and you're no longer driven by these ego needs, but you're driven by the soul. You're driven by those things that are so fulfilled and other fulfilled, you know, that how we serve other people. And I just think, you know, we spend the first half to three quarters of our life trying to satisfy these capitalistic, these accumulation of stuff ideals. And I can just advocate that very few times have the stuff been as satiating as I thought it would be. Now, I don't want to say it's not nice. You know, it's nice to have a nice home and a nice car, and you know, those are nice conveniences, but they are not what define who I am and define what's important to me in life.
Yeah, you know, let me be clear. I love a little luxury. What's been interesting about it is, you know, we talked earlier about life knows where to find you. Life knows how to give you the experiences that you need to grow and evolve your own soul and spirit. And I tell you, I must have some soul contract that says no mercy, because, you know, life really took me on quite a journey a few years ago. I literally sold everything I owned and moved out of my apartment, mainly because at the time I couldn't afford it. And what I thought would be, you know, a journey of a few months off ended up being 2.5 years of what I call my walkabout. And I wrote a book about that called Trustfall. And it was at the very end of this 2.5 years of traveling. And I mean, I was broke. And I, you know, I had these.
And you're traveling the world. I still can't believe this story.
I know. I mean, again, you know, I told you life is a cosmic receiving game. People paid for a lot of things for me. And I tell you, it's not easy to accept. But it's quite miraculous when you realize life is a cosmic receiving game and you can, you know, receive all kinds of goodies, you know, come your way. But
doesn't it all depend on what you're looking for? If life is a cosmic receiving game, it depends on what are your expectations. If your expectations are the $1 million house and the Mercedes Benz, then life is not a cosmic receiving game. But if we're talking about soulful needs, life is a cosmic receiving game. Would you agree?
Yeah, you know, well, let's put a pin in that for just a second, because I want to finish the story about how
okay. All of a sudden I
started receiving a lot more, and it was because of an epiphany. So I'm going to come back to that, but in a slightly different way, which is, you know, on this walkabout, at the very end, when I really had no money and I was just over all of it, and it was an amazing 2.5 years. And if anyone's interested, they can read the book about it. It's called Trustfall. But
yeah, I love the book.
I had to really go deep and realize that is my self-worth defined by money? Because here I have no money, no job, no house. At this point, a car that my parents had given me because I'd sold my other one. I mean, I had nothing. I had materially nothing. And I had to do this inquiry of, but am I still valuable? Do I still have worth? Am I still successful because I have none of these things? And it wasn't like all of a sudden I asked the question and the answer was yes. Like, it took some really deep inquiry and some really deep soul searching to realize, like, I am as amazing without any of those things as I am with all of those things. And I can feel really good about myself with nothing as I can with everything. And you want to know the crazy thing is, the minute that I realized I was valuable with nothing, it was and unraveled that whole entire, you know, script that you need all these things to have value in the world, that I felt valuable and successful without any of those things, was the minute my whole entire life turned around and massive abundance started showing up. because I didn't need it to justify my self-worth. And so life is like, well, if you don't need it, well, we'll just give it to you anyway. Like, there's no resistance in receiving it.
So receiving is a mindset. It's
an openness.
I like that. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And yet, I guess my point is that when we let go of the goal and we let go of this idea that our ego needs certain achievements to feel a certain way, and we can feel that way without anything, we can feel that way with nothing in our life. If we were homeless on the street, we could still feel good about ourselves. Now, that might not be the experience we prefer, and that's fine, but that we can still feel good about ourselves, meaning we're not waiting to feel good because we have something in our life. We have a relationship. We have a beautiful home. We have a great job. We have a promotion, right? Like, we can feel good about ourselves without any of that. And so when the answer to that is yes, like, that's a deep place to get to, and all of a sudden, life starts to flow a lot more. What did I say we were putting a pin in? I wanted to come back to.
Oh, great question. I didn't mark it. It was, never mind. We can just go on.
Never mind. But, and I think I maybe came around to it again, which is this, the feeling, life about receiving, it's like that life is, if you're open and you feel self-worth and you are okay with what life has to give you, that doesn't necessarily what matches to your goal list, it's actually probably better. It's quite an amazing way to live life. I mean, life will give you exactly what you need. It just may not always come in the package that you have envisioned.
Exactly. You know, and I so agree with you. You know, I had a year of experiencing it, and I'm planning this year at the same time. Now, I want to come from the other side. It's not necessarily playing devil's advocate, but it's completing this concept. So we're titling this episode to Let Go and Trust Life, to just let life take charge and follow the lead that is there, and to accept what is offered at the moment. But that certainly doesn't mean that we totally disregard planning, but it has a great impact on the way we do plan. So planning, we are not suggesting that you don't plan, that you just sit around every day and wait for the phone to ring or for the cosmic email. There remains some planning involved, does there not?
Well, I think like anything, you know, there's always phases and points of process along the way. You know, when do you plan, right? At what point do you plan? And I think that whether it's a business or in your own personal life, like, there is a moment where planning is quite a helpful stage in the process. But I think it's less important than most people think, because again, if you're planning everything out, you're missing a lot of magic. And I'm going to give you a great example of this. One of my dear friends has planned her retirement since she was 25. She's now 64, and she has been planning and planning and planning for 40 years her retirement. And you know, she's kind of been a little red hen about it. And you know, she will have a beautiful retirement. But I mean, it's almost like planning to the nth degree, because I think she's missed out, my own personal opinion, a lot along the way in planning and letting life provide some magic for her. And so did you need to plan for 40 years for your retirement? Maybe. If it makes you feel good, I say knock yourself out. But I think if we were more open to the gifts that life were to give us, more open to receiving, all the abundance she was looking for would have come in along the way, no planning necessary.
I like that. I like the magic. I like the concept of the magic of life. And if we're planning, we miss the magic of life, because we are determining what the magic is. And
yeah, you're so busy scripting it out that there's no opening for something magical to drop in.
Yes.
I'm wrapping up a project at the Gates Foundation, and then this is the time of year what they call annual planning. And it's a whole year of planning for the next year. And so a certain amount of that is somewhat helpful. I mean, you need to think about budgets and how we're going to
spend
money.
In business, yes, of course.
Trying to achieve, you know. And so, and yet what I also, it's been my experience, is that because everything is so planned, nothing unscripted can happen during the year. And so we miss out on all these amazing opportunities because it's all too prescriptive.
Oh, really?
Yes, and I think most businesses find themselves in that situation.
And which is unfortunate, especially with an organization like the Gates Foundation, because there could be wonderful opportunities that come up during the year that are not scripted, and so they don't occur.
Yeah, or like in most companies, they're like, well, we're going to grow by 13% this year, and everybody needs to sell, you know, X amount to hit that number, and it's also scripted. Well, what if you were in the magic of it, and instead of 13%, it was 82% growth? But nobody likes that because it looks like in the stock markets, it's too much of a spike. Everybody wants to be so controlled and have predictability. Well, where is the magic in predictability? And so it's that balance of planning and predictability and magic and unexpected greatness.
This is making, you know, this whole concept, Taryn, makes life, to me, much more exciting. It makes my life, you know, I'm the adventurer, explorer, and it gives life a much more exciting purview than this following this script. I'm not a great script follower, but let me tell you what my wife and I do, and I don't know if I've mentioned it on the podcast, but every year between Christmas and New Year's, we take 3 days and so we can have one day where we wake up and go to sleep in this same out-of-town, you know, little hotel somewhere. And what we do during that time is that we evaluate our marriage. And, you know, we've been married 33 years. And just say, is there anything I could do better for you to serve you in our marriage? Or is there anything I've been doing that you would like me to stop doing? And you know, this is not an easy question, Taryn. There's been times these have been tearful discussions because we're not afraid to get to the nitty-gritty, to what the issues are. But as a result of these, I can say after 33 years of marriage, I have a great marriage. I mean, it's just amazing. But that's planning without planning. You know what I mean? It's evaluating the circumstance and saying, this is what would make it better. This is what would make us better. And we do that, and we end up having a great year, but it doesn't hit this goal list. And we also will do our budgets, and we'll plan our vacations because, you know, when you're sole proprietors, you know, you need to do that. You need to plan the time where you're going to be away. So back to the point, we're not totally disregarding planning, but I think we are disregarding goal setting as a part of our process. You know, goal setting is what we want to achieve and accomplish, and we leave that to life. Does that make sense to you, Taryn?
Yeah, and I think that's really beautiful. I haven't heard very many couples do that, where it's just sort of, you know, ritual almost every year. So I think that's really a testament to your marriage. But what I would say about the goal is this idea of a false goal versus a goal of the heart. I mean, it sounds to me like a goal of the heart here is that you want a great marriage. I mean, it's something that's important to you. And so because it's a goal of the heart, you dedicate some time to it, and this is the ritual that, you know, seems to be working. And so, you know, when you have a goal of the heart, it doesn't need to be on a list. And a conversation doesn't need to be documented with, you know, outcomes that then need to be tracked and planned.
No.
Right?
Because they're typically, you know, when my wife says you could be doing so-and-so differently, I already know it. You know, it's, yeah, I could. I've been kind of a dick there. You know, I could do better. And she's very open at the same time. But, you know, it you know, to those of you in the audience who may be thinking this is something you could try, and I highly, highly recommend it. If you're honest and serious, it is an honest and serious process, that sometimes some of the things you ask for are difficult, or some of the ways you're feeling can be difficult, but it's preventive maintenance. It's fixing the problem before the problem occurs, or at least getting it in halfway, and you can move on. We are nearing the end of our time, but I have one final question that I know many of that people would like to hear addressed, and I'm curious of your opinion. I am sure that many of our audience would like to replace the idea of trusting life with the idea of trusting God or the divine, that God will have, you know, is having control, or the divine is, you know, having control or having input or say or giving us advice. Would you agree with that, that's perfectly fine?
Oh, gosh, you know, there's so many words that people use, and everyone, you know, finds their way through so many paths. What I would say is ultimately a matter of faith. Do you have faith that the experiences that you're getting are the ones that are there to serve you the most, even if they don't come in a package that appears desirable? Right now, is it a divine plan, God's plan, life's plan, your plan, spirit's plan? You know, pick the word. It's all ultimately the same thing, right? But it's a faith in something bigger that...
Exactly.
It's a bigger part of you that's there to serve you at all times, giving you the experiences, and can we be open enough to really receive them? And I wanted to underscore one thing that you said in that last point about, you know, your marriage and this thing you guys do together, which is, I think it illustrates so perfectly this idea between, you know, do we need goals, or do we, you're talking about an experience you're wanting, right? And it's so deep and it's rich, like you're wanting an experience that's deep, that's rich, that's committed. And so I think for a lot of us, what we really want is these really fulfilling relationships. And yet what we put on our list is not that, what we're really wanting. And so I think it's kind of a beautiful highlight of really thinking about, well, what is it do we really want that's not necessarily material or on a list, but it's really what does our heart want? And I think that's ultimately the exercise that I've gotten to, which is what does my heart want? And how do I operate from that place?
Yeah, what does your heart want? In addition to a divine, a life, or whatever, it's addition to the feedback or the opportunities offered by the cosmos, which knows better than us what we need, and is offering these opportunities for us. We think we know what we need. We really don't know what we need. You know, when we set up goals in the beginning, you know, maybe early in life it's really, really necessary. But the older I get, I find I don't need that. I need insight. I need to pay attention. I need to be keenly aware of my environment, of my people, of what kind of job I'm doing. And my next steps will come naturally. But they don't come, Taryn, they don't come without this period of waiting, which is so uncomfortable. Because it's not like you just say, okay, God, divine, universe, I'm ready for your input. It doesn't work that way. The input comes at the choice of the spirit.
Yeah, it comes at the moment you need it, not necessarily when you want it. Those are two different timelines. Mm-hmm. And I tell you that you can really look at the magic in people's lives. Like, you could look at someone whose life seems magical and someone's maybe who seems less magical. And I tell you, there's really one key difference, and it's how open to receiving, you know, are they? And also, like that idea that you can sit in the nothingness for a while, and most people can't do it. There's too much
fear, no.
And so they won't, and they stay too busy. And so when you're that busy, there's no opening for life to give you something. It's almost like the requirement to receive is to be less busy, in a sense.
Yes, there's a man that you listen to that talked about meditation, and I like that. And then, you know, there's the... there's the formal sort of medication, you know, whether you're using transcendental meditation or your own, you know, I use a podcast, and he says that's very helpful, but that's not the kind of meditation you need. The kind of meditation you need is to just sit quietly and listen and ponder how your life is going on, and ponder the movement of the spirit in your life. And there comes the advice, or I don't know if advice, but direction that will find you fulfillment.
It's so true. And it is that listening. And how often do we sit and just listen and listen to our heart, listen to ourselves, listen to what Spirit's saying? I mean, it's not a practice that most people I know have, and yet it's a profound one. It really is. And also listening in ways that maybe are not inside of meditation, but listening is like, okay, well, if life's giving me this experience, what do I need to listen to here? You know, and it's sort of asking those questions, because I think we're so programmed to always be in action mode versus kind of listening or receiving mode.
That's been very common. Receiving has been very common in our talk today, and that you have to be quiet to receive. You can't be so busy that you're blocking off any reception from any source whatsoever, even the source of your heart. You don't even hear the source of your heart.
Yeah, like imagine that you're out for a run and you're out running, you know, and most of us are running through life, and someone's got an absolutely beautiful gift for you just waiting to give it to you, and yet you're so busy running that there's no stopping, you know, like you're not stopping to look or wait to receive or anything, you're busy running. And so if you were, though, however, on your run and you said stop and just stand and, you know, ponder the beautiful sky and the stars and on a park bench and just invite anyone nearby to come sit down, like you'd be amazed who would show up with something that would be a beautiful gift, right? And so how do we stop running long enough to sit down on the bench and just be in a moment of receiving?
We are over our time, but I do have a final question. What would you suggest to our listeners as a way to start receiving and listening to the voice that is of a higher power, of another state of being that can advise us, that can give us gifts? What do you have? What kind of advice do you have for our people?
Well, I'll just give you a personal practice that I do, which is I was actually just driving yesterday, and I do this often in the car because it's when I can be quiet. But sometimes in my house, I do it too, where I just imagine life, like I imagine, like, you know, that beautiful deliciousness you get when you open a present, you don't know what's inside. There's always that moment of like, ooh, I wonder what it's going to be.
Yes.
And it's kind of that delicious moment of the anticipation of receiving something great. So it's an energy. You know what that feels like. You can recall that feeling. So when I'm driving, I often do that where I think, oh my gosh, life, I will receive anything you want to give me as a gift, anything. And I don't know what it's going to be, but I'm going to sit in this moment of anticipation, knowing that whatever you're going to give me is going to be fantastic and great and exactly what I want, even if I don't know that I want it.
And so you ask.
Well, it's an energy that I choose to sit in for as long as I can. And in this case, I was driving about half an hour, and probably about for 15 minutes of it, I could hold that energy of receiving. And it's the energy of, okay, life, I will receive whatever you want to give me. And I imagine that life is giving me treats. And I don't even know what they are. It's not anything specific. It's not like I want a new car, I want a new job, I want a boyfriend. It's none of those things. It's not specific. It's just that moment of I don't know what's inside the box, but I love that I'm receiving something great. And so how can we, if I was going to offer an invitation, it would be how can we sit in that energy of just, whether it's in our car, whether it's looking in the sun, whether it's sitting in a chair and we're quiet, of you saying, okay, life, I'll receive anything you want to give me. I'm open to receiving. And it's not so much an ask as it is an energy of, and I'll wait and I'll sit here because I love this feeling of receiving. So it's sitting in the feeling of receiving, not in the feeling of asking. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
And it's, we know the energy of asking, but not the energy of receiving.
It is so difficult. That is so contrary to everything that we've been taught. That we've been taught to be so active and so proactive in starting things, you know, all the proactive podcasts, you know, the ones that I was listening to for the longest time, and I don't listen to much anymore because I'm not so much into that. Taryn, we could go on. You are so insightful, and you bring such challenging and not just challenging, but heartwarming and life-changing ideas. I so appreciate you as a friend and as a guest today. Thank you for coming on today.
Thank you so much for having me. I love our talks, as always, and truly thank you.
Thanks. What a great talk. I also want to thank our listeners for tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life. That's L-I-F-E. And as usual, until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off for now. See you later.
I felt like I was listening to a private conversation.
Did you?
Compliment.
Who talks about this stuff? You guys really took it from a different angle. You were really, yeah, I mean, I've heard talk about receiving and some other stuff here, but it got very pointed, it got very personal, and I it pulls you in. It makes you feel like you're listening to two people honestly have a conversation, like I was eavesdropping on your phone.
Wait, that's such a great compliment.
I think that is. I think that's what you want to achieve. I think that's what you want to come across as.
Yeah, it really was a conversation because, you know, I follow my questions, but I follow Terrence Lee.
Too many podcasts and media in general try and talk to you. It's like going to a class. They're going to talk and I'm going to take notes. Very few talk with you.
That's really true.
Yeah,
and that's what we want. We want people to talk with us. You know, even if I'm just listening, yeah. I feel like I'm in the group. I'm part of the conversation. Even if I'm just listening.
Yeah, that's unusual in podcasts because
they have an agenda. They got 5 points and tune it in. I'm going to show you how smart I am and take note.
So into their subject that they're not into the audience listening.
No, and they're not open to wonderment. They're not open to. Wow, what? I'm always trying to get hosts to do that more. React, you know, as these actors say, be in the moment, listen. Act like the audience, act like a little kid. What? Why? How? I think you guys did a lot of that today.
Yeah, well, we've done, this is our third session and probably, I don't know, what do you think, Taryn, fourth hour?
I know.
On this subject.
It's like such a juicy topic, so we could have gone another 2 hours, you know?
Yeah, we could replace Matt Kahn, just the two of us chatting about this stuff.
True.
I'd love to hear some reactions if you guys, you mentioned some people you know that are similarly going through end of year, I don't know, whatever you want to call it. I'm going to say the end of year blues or blahs or whatever, but how would they react
angst,
to this?
Yeah.
Angst, yeah. Would they listen to this? Would they identify with it? Would they say, thank goodness someone's talking about it? Because the whole world, I mean, I was in PR for 20 years. That was always a guaranteed story if you could come up with a look back at the year or a look forward at 2019. Every newspaper, every TV show, every radio wanted to do that story. So there's always an urge when the calendar changes to look back or look forward. You guys said, let's look at it a different way.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was the idea of the title. You know, you know the popular title, Let Go and Let God.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we took it off of that. And we had Let Go and Let Life, and then I like the idea of Let Go and Trust Life.
Hard to do. Hard to do.
You know, but it's not. Once you start it, it's not.
I'll give you my classic example. Maybe you guys don't want to hear this too personal story, but years and years ago, I don't have any biological children. I adopted a child. My wife and I adopted a child when we were in our 40s. What a dumb thing to do. She's like, why didn't we talk about this when we were in our 20s or 30s? We could have done something about it. But all of a sudden, I got the urge. The clock had run out, and I had to have a child. So we went to a foster, we're good Catholics, went to foster care, and we thought, okay, we're in good shape, and got a good long relationship and house and jobs, and we'll have a kid by Tuesday. And it took a year. And it wasn't because we weren't trying or looking, but you can't, there's nothing you can do. You just go to these agencies and they say, well, we'll find you one. Just trust. Just trust. A year's gone by. Trust. That was just awful. Just that, just letting it happen. Yeah. Now, we did find a wonderful child, and she's our daughter now, and she's grown up, and all these great things. But that was an awful, awful period of time for me. Did we hear anybody? Did we get anything? You know, it just waiting for the universe or for God to produce this somebody in our life here, or to produce a change or a result. Charlie coming in, I'm bored. I got nothing to do. I mean, that's just an awful period of time to just trust that you're going to go out of it.
It's so true. It's so hard.
Yeah, waiting is the difficult thing, especially if you have nothing going on during the waiting period.
And then you feel like you got to do something. I got to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. We started going to adoption fairs. It was awful. These kids lined up like puppies in the playground or puppies in a pound. And I thought, oh, this isn't the way to do it.
No, geez.
You got to just trust.
That would be painful.
You got to trust. Oh, my God, trust. I realized how bad I am at trusting. And just, I want to take charge. I want to do something. I want the five steps to fix my life here. Come on.
I gave you five minutes.
Yeah.
But this is such a great point, because didn't life just give you the experience you needed to unravel a little bit of that? There was nothing you could do.
Nothing I could do. There was not a darn ding-dong thing I could do about it, and that was frustrating. It was and awful. And I couldn't believe that would produce anything. It did. I don't know that I'd trust any more than that. In a second, I'd be like, oh, I got lucky on that one. I'm not going to let that happen again.
Funny thing is, like, you 10,000 times, it doesn't get any easier the 10,000th time. You know what I mean? It's still
yeah.
hard.
I think you guys should do a show on that. Waiting. It's like waiting for Godot, the play, and the guy never arrives. You're watching the whole play, and he never shows up.
Is that really a play?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Waiting for Godot.
Very, very popular.
Famous
play.
One. Samuel Beckett, I think. Yeah.
Very esoteric.
Very out there, very strange. Two guys in a room, and they're waiting for this guy named Godot to show up. And then, meanwhile,
they're waiting by a tree.
Tree or something, whatever they're waiting. And they're waiting. And meanwhile, they start these conversations and fights. And all this stuff happens while they're waiting. We're waiting for Godot. They're waiting for somebody who never arrives.
Yeah, yeah. I saw it at South Coast Repertory. They call it waiting for Godot, even though...
Oh, yeah, no, it's Godot.
I've always said Godot, and they use it waiting for Godot. But it certainly is a conversation piece.
And what can happen while you're waiting for something else to happen? I guess that's the point of the play.
That would be a good talk. I like that, Paul. Yeah.
Yeah.
Waiting. That's a good title too. Waiting.
Well, when I wrote this this blog that's Boredom or Becoming. And I can't remember the psychologist that talked about boredom is more, if we understand it, is more a period of waiting than it is a period of...
I never thought of it. It takes 9 months to have a baby, and not much happens in that 9 months. Just, you're the belly gets bigger, but not much happens, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I tell a woman that.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it isn't a lot. You're just waiting. There's nothing you're really doing. You've already done something. Nothing you can do.
You've already done something. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah,
right? It's all
right.
Happening.
Yeah, it's happening for you, right? And it's all unseen. You don't know what's going to come out. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think waiting is not something we do well in. I don't do it well. I don't think most people in our society do it well. We want instant answers, instant solutions. Take charge. Every book, all the self-help books are to self-help you to do something. If I opened up the book and said, just put this book down and wait, I'd throw it against the wall. I'd want my money back. Here's the answer. There is no answer. Just wait.
You know, it's such a play of the divine masculine and divine feminine, right? Divine masculine is very action-oriented. You know, divine feminine is very receiving-oriented. We spend so much time in the masculine, but not very much time in the feminine, and yet balance happens between the two, right? There's a time for action, there's a time for receiving.
Yeah, and Taryn has really pointed out that I've had dream visitations and more things of the divine feminine, and she said, the divine feminine is really talking to you, and and it really is a heart thing, and it is what word do you use? Not invitation, receiving. that it is a time of receiving and listening.
My dad taught me you don't wait. You get up in the morning, you put your suit on, and you go.
Yeah, that's American ethos.
Yeah, you don't wait for anything. You go get it.
Yeah, but it's not like that around the world.
Yeah.
Well, it's not that that's a bad thing either, right? Like, I mean, again, there's a time for action and there's a time for receiving. Like, it's just knowing how to balance the two.
I had no balance for receiving. I certainly had no balance for patience for waiting for that period of time for some child to appear on the horizon and magically like a rabbit out of a hat here.
Well, Taryn, it is always such a pleasure. When are you going to be in town?
Soon. Speaking of waiting, I've been waiting for 2 weeks for some kind of insight, clarity, inspiration to get the hell out of Seattle. It hasn't arrived. It's not here today. Maybe it'll be here tomorrow.
go open the mailbox. It's in there right now.
Yeah, my wife is dying to see you as well, so...
Oh, I know. It is on my desire list to come down to Southern California and see you and Pam and all my peeps. So I'm waiting for inspiration on exactly how that unfolds, speaking of waiting.
We'll have her on the show when you come here and do an episode with her, yes. Whenever that is.
That would be fun. I'd like to see you again, too, Paul. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Do a live one here.
Okay, yeah. My friend.
All right, friend. Thank you for letting us... chat. I really enjoyed it.
Good holidays, and I'm just going to go home and sit on the couch and wait for an answer here.
Do it, and then let me know what you get.
All right.
Okay.
All right, guys. I'll talk
Take
to you
care.
Later. Bye.
Bye-bye. Love you.